Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Oliver Holland. Oliver is a former editor of Cool Tools, after which he ended up pursuing a career in medicine. He's currently a third-year resident in emergency medicine at Yale University, and when not working in the emergency department, he enjoys spending his time foraging for mushrooms and wild plants. Hey, Oliver, it's great to have you.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
And it's so great to hear your voice again, Oliver. We worked for many years together on Cool Tools, which you dropped out to become a doctor. It's like, I don't know. But it's so wonderful to have you back.
It's wonderful to be back. And it's actually kind of funny because when I talk to my stepfather in particular, he still thinks the best job I've ever had was editor of Cool Tools.
That's awesome.
It's really great.
Yeah. We've tried to get you on this show a few times, Oliver, but for some reason, you keep on making up excuses that you're like pulling 80 hours a week in the emergency room.
Saving people's lives.
Yeah, come on. Get your priorities straight.
Well, I finally have my priorities straight, and I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great.
It's so great to have you, Oliver. And I want to talk to you about mushroom and wild plant foraging, but let's talk about your tools first of all. What have you been using lately?
So I have a couple of really useful tools that I have gotten really excited about recently. The first is kind of the most interesting to me. It's called the Butterfly IQ. And it is a very new piece of tech. It just was released in the past 2 years. And it's a personal ultrasound that you can buy and that plugs into iOS devices now. And then in the future, it should have support for Android.
Whoa.
And what would you use a personal ultrasound for?
So on my day-to-day job, I use ultrasound to quickly evaluate potentially life-threatening illnesses. So I can use it to check to see if there's fluid in someone's lungs, to see if they have a gallstone in their gallbladder, to see if they have fluid, like free fluid or blood in their belly. So it's a really incredible tool with which we can very quickly intervene and figure out what's going on. And the big difference now is that historically ultrasounds have been $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 just for a setup. And the Butterfly IQ is really different because they have brought the price down all the way to about $2,000. And instead of using crystals, they use a silicon chip, which can be sort of much, much more easily produced and also is a lot easier to sort of adapt for different circumstances.
And so I can certainly absolutely understand the breakthrough that this would be in the medical field where, you know, maybe everybody could carry one around. But what about, is this a consumer item? Is this something that I might want to have?
Yeah. So I think that in the next, I would say 5 or 10 years, that people with certain conditions will end up taking these home. It's something that can be quickly taught to people and they can use it as a means of checking to make sure their heart function is where it's supposed to be, checking to make sure that there isn't a ton of fluid in their lungs. And if there is, they can quickly call their cardiologist or primary care doctor and schedule a visit. So the technology is definitely evolving. Right now, it's predominantly for healthcare providers, but I think the future will see a democratization of the technology.
Is ultrasound perfectly safe? Like, I know, you know, x-rays, of course, you don't want to be exposed too much, but can you just point this thing at your body for as long as you want and not worry about cell or tissue damage?
So it's a great question. And ultrasound is almost universally considered to be perfectly safe. It's a very low energy type of radiation. It's actually just a modified high frequency sound. Mm-hmm. The few instances where you don't want to use it that are very theoretical, and radiologists do a lot of research on this subject, are if you're going to be ultrasounding something in utero. So like if you were going to be looking at a fetus, you wouldn't want to have prolonged studies with a higher energy waveform like you would with like Doppler or color ultrasound.
I see. Like, you know, if I had, could you kind of use it like you might think of using an X-ray? Like I have let's say I have a sketchy knee and I was wondering if it was inflamed or something was happening. Could I look at my own knee that way? And would that even be useful?
Yeah, so it's really interesting that the fields that are sort of getting the most out of this at the moment are actually sports medicine. So definitely if you felt like your knee was swollen and you wanted to take a quick look, it could discern between just generalized inflammation and fluid that might require drainage. It's similar to X-ray in the sense that it allows you to peer inside the body, but it's different in the sense that it's really focused and targeted in terms of it does best when it's used on specific sort of tasks, whereas X-rays are kind of a little bit more, they sort of are useful for another specific set of tasks and can be sort of more easily read by radiologists.
Right. So I could imagine with the kind of advances we have in AI now, that you would be able to, you or that we would be able to apply AI at some point to assist in that kind of reading of these things as an amateur would use them on their own body.
So Butterfly actually has a really interesting take on that, and they have incorporated AI directly into the app itself, and it can do a quick estimation of things like ejection fraction, which is really important in heart failure, which is something that you used to have like a very formal echocardiogram for. So it definitely seems to be changing the way in which we think about like biomedical imaging. And I'm really excited about it. I use it on a daily basis at work. And I think that especially in the international field, you're going to see a lot more of this coming online.
Looks like a real game changer.
Yeah. And you say right now it's sort of running around $2,000.
Yep. So it's about $2,000. And I think that if I had any estimation that the price will probably come down a little bit, but I also think that the devices themselves will end up getting a lot better in terms of their resolution and sort of usability.
Right. So for the while, they'll probably remain at the same price, but just get better for over time.
Absolutely.
Cheaper. Yeah.
Amazing.
That makes perfect sense.
It looks like fun. Actually.
Yeah, it does. That would be so cool. I mean, I could see people just kind of, you know, doing their own bodies.
Exactly.
Just to,
that's explore. What I want to do. Yeah.
What's in find here?
Yeah. There is like some concern that with the democratization that people will end up finding things and it might freak them out a little bit and they might end up having to seek care. But I do think that there's something about the technology that really promotes like an understanding, and it allows you to have sort of like another way of thinking about your body and what's going on. And I think that from that perspective, it's really great for me when I'm scanning to be able to show somebody as I'm doing it exactly what I'm looking at and why it's important.
Yeah, that's so fantastic. Does it also hook up to an iPad?
So as of right now, the model that I have can hook up to an iPad or an iPhone. They just released a newer model that has a USB-C attachment. It's exactly the same. It just has like a USB-C attachment, which can be used for like the newer iPads. And also the anticipation is you'll be able to use it with Android devices.
Okay. Now, this may be a little bit farther afield, but I was just speculating that you could do a VR version if you had a stereo pair of them.
So I don't know how stereo ultrasound would work in terms of the interference with the waveforms. But as of right now, the way it works is the footprint of the device that you use. Traditionally, there were three or four different types, and the newest model, they have one footprint that can sort of switch in terms of the beam it uses to sort of capture a wider or shallower or deeper beam. So it'd be interesting to think about it from a VR perspective, at the very least, of having like a different way of like visualizing the information as it comes out.
I mean, all they would need to do is just shift. If you had two of them as a pair, let's say they were separated by, you know, the eye distance, all you would need is shift the spectrum in one by, you know, a little bit. It would probably still work, but they would just be slightly different frequencies, which say they wouldn't interfere. I think they could do it if there was any kind of a need for it. I don't have no idea if it matters, but
yeah, I'm sure that they're probably working on all sorts of different ways.
Yeah. Well, this is great as it is. It's a fantastic find. Thanks. What else do you have that you are excited by these days?
Yeah, so I have another tool that I use on a daily basis. It's from Leatherman, and it's their Raptor Shears. So it's basically a foldable pair of what are called trauma shears, which are heavy-duty scissors. I carry them in my pocket on a daily basis. They're really great because it really sort of makes it a form factor that's just easy to kind of pop in your pocket or pop in your bag. And they're a really, really useful set of scissors. I found that I use them just as much outside of the emergency department as I do in the emergency department. And Leatherman has also built in a couple of other additional tools, as they're famous for. One of them is a seatbelt cutter. In addition to that, they have a ring cutter, which is actually really great in my line of work. But also, it's amazing how often people get rings stuck and have to go to jewelers. I think for me, I probably use the ring cutter as much in terms of intervening on a patient as I do the shears themselves.
So this is strong enough to cut through a ring.
It can get through most metals except for some of like the more
hardened steel.
Hardened steel.
Yeah. I'm looking at a picture here on Amazon. It looks like a kind of a scissors that has a couple of strange little other blades coming off the center where normally it would pivot, and there's a ruler. But how big is it? Is it like, you know, what's the?
It's about 3 inches in length and about 2 inches across. Okay. There's a little triangular button. So when it folds out, it clicks into place and that locks into place. And there's a little triangular button that when you depress, you can kind of fold it back over. When it's closed, you can use the seatbelt cutter, and there's also a wrench that you can use for like oxygen. When it's open, there is actually closer to the pivot point. There is it's where the ring cutter sits, and uh-huh. That's where you kind of slip under and can get under most rings and kind of crunch them together.
And according to this website, there's also on the tip or the end of the handle, I guess, a carbide glass breaker. So it's definitely an EMT modified scissors. So do you carry it in like a pouch, its own pouch, or is this a pocket tool or what?
So I keep it in, I wear these sort of adventure pants that have a little kind of like a cargo pant, but like a little bit of a just like a little pocket on my thigh. A lot of people will carry them. They come with like a mole, like nylon strap thing that you can slide them in. I personally don't like that tactical look. I kind of like to have a more streamlined look. So I just have them in my pocket when I'm working, and then I just keep them in my bag when I'm not. So I have them a little pocket in my bag. I can actually attach the mole holster, and I just keep it there for safekeeping so it doesn't sort of slide around or get lost.
Wow. So, and of course, you could use for cutting other kinds of things in a workshop, not just medicals.
And they are super strong. You can cut coins. I mean, you can cut almost any type of metal that you can think of. I had a pair. I'm on my second pair because one of them got pilfered. But I had my first pair I had for about 3 years, and I never had a problem. And I basically didn't run into anything that I couldn't cut within reason.
Wow. Cool.
And so the Raptor shears are about $70.
Yep. It's a little bit more expensive than some of the other trauma shears out there, but for something that I use as frequently as I do, I think it's definitely worthwhile, especially with that form factor.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard of these. That's these are really cool. Neat. The last question before we move on, is it TSA compliant?
You know, that's a good question. I have, when I've flown with them, it was in a checked baggage.
Yeah.
I think it might be because it doesn't really have a blade. It's just a scissor, but I'll have to look into that. I'll get back
well,
to
it's
that.
Not, yeah, someone else can look that up. But anyway, that is something that you might, I mean, I travel with carry-on only, just on basic principles. And so that kind of restricts what I can have. You'd be surprised what they reject. There's often no logic. I had a little tiny little microscopic, I consider it, screwdriver, and it was like, it was like for fixing my camera screws. It was,
oh man. Gosh. Yeah.
Anyway, so this is a great one. Thanks. I'm excited to say, well, what's third? What else do you have?
So there's you'll notice a theme.
Well, that's fine.
I found that when I sort of got became sort of more invested in my career, I just noticed that there was a bunch of stuff that I was using that I'd never really read about online. And I think it's kind of helpful to sort of get the word out. But the next one is, it's going to seem a little weird, but it's called a bat clip. And it's a stethoscope holder. It's basically a piece of leather with a clip on the back that closes with Velcro, and it attaches to your either belt loop, or I keep mine on the outside of my pocket. And it allows you to sort of keep your stethoscope folded up and on your belt without having to sort of keep it around your neck so basically the alternative would be keeping it in your neck or keeping it in a bag or in your sort of white coat or whatever pocket that you have. And it's something that I probably use 20 to 30, probably more than that, 20 to 40 times a day. And it really makes a difference in terms of having my stethoscope really easily handy. It keeps it from sliding off my neck. It's just a really simple, useful tool. I like it also because it was designed by another emergency medicine physician. He's a great guy. When I had problems with my first generation one, he immediately replaced it with an upgraded model with better Velcro. So I could definitely attest to the fact that it's a very well-made and a very useful tool, especially if you work in the medical field and you find yourself using a stethoscope.
I'm trying to locate this online. So besides bat clip, what else might we want to look for?
So bat clip stethoscope holder. Okay. It's you can find it on Amazon. That's where I bought mine. So it's a really simple tool. It's it's just a piece of leather with some Velcro and a clip on the back that you can hook to your belt loop. And it's something that I find makes holding onto my stethoscope a lot easier, makes sure that it doesn't fall off when I am running to a scene. And it makes sure that it's actually really nice to keep my stethoscope from getting tangled up when I put it away. Oh, yeah. Yeah, BAT, a la Batman.
Speaking of stethoscopes, are all of them basically still analog? And is there no advantage to having, you know, super powered, you know, high tech electronic ones?
So I would say that of the people I work with, I know one or two people who use an electronic stethoscope called a Echo or an Echo, EKO. I think that the benefit of the electronic ones is that you can actually amplify quiet sounds. So if you have a very quiet heart murmur, or if you hear some sort of crackles or some changes in the lungs, you can amplify it and or record it. And there is another brand that I have heard of that is actually using something like AI to analyze, to evaluate for what kind of murmur you're hearing.
So there might be some advantages then.
Absolutely. And I think that if I were in cardiology, or if I sort of focused on like a particular population where I really needed to hone in on like a particular type of murmur, I think it'd be very useful. I think the other thing I've actually heard is that doctors with hearing loss find them very, very useful because it basically prolongs their ability to listen to and identify sort of quieter sounds. So there has been, I know there are a couple of older docs in pediatrics and in cardiology where I work that end up using them.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
And ironically, the butterfly that I was talking to you about earlier, in a lot of ways, will end up supplanting the stethoscope because instead of relying on sort of an oral interpretation of relying on sound that you can hear, the butterfly really sort of transforms it into something you can see. And so instead of just guessing at a murmur, you can actually literally visualize it and quantify it, which is really different.
Well, there also might be some another dimension where they actually add the oral dimension and try and have that, you know, say feed into the AI or something so that you could imagine something that does both dimensions.
Absolutely. And I think that for me, stethoscopes are essential in a lot of ways. One, because in a lot of aspects, medicine is still part performance. And I think there's something that a lot of patients find really comforting about the sort of nature of the physical exam. And B, it is very useful to be able to quickly listen. Even if the power is out, even if you have no other piece of technology, you can, with appropriate sort of application, use a stethoscope to diagnose a truly mind-boggling array of findings. So the physical exam is definitely not dead. I think it just needs to be adapted for the modern era.
Cool.
Well, great. So so tell us about your fourth one.
The next one that I really enjoy, and this is a little bit more applicable to everybody, is an application called PediStat. In the world of emergency medicine, there is a need to have to quickly drop dosing for anything that comes in. Specifically, there's a range of neonates to babies to children, and the drug dosing and sort of interventions that we do vary based on like how old they are. And there's this app called PediStat, and it's spelled PediStat. And basically what it allows you to do is you put in the age or size of the kid that you're taking care of. And it will tell you everything about what kind of dosing for, let's say, like pain medications or fever medications, and or what the normal vital signs are. And so from the perspective of being useful for patients outside of the world of medicine, it can be really useful for specific dosing of things like Tylenol and ibuprofen, which mm-hmm. oftentimes parents get wrong because they aren't doing a weight-based dosing. They'll just give what they think is the right amount, or it's too confusing on the bottle. And so this is just really nice because you just plug in the weight or the year or the age, and it will pop out the appropriate dose and or tell you what the appropriate vital signs are for your kiddo.
And just to be clear to people, this is a phone app. This is an app that runs on your phone.
Yeah.
Another one of the things of the medicine moving to the phone. And I wonder if, does it allow you to actually use your camera to kind of like read the barcode on the bottle so you can actually get the right medicine into it?
So this one doesn't do that. I think there are some that you can take pictures of the medicine bottle itself, and it will sort of give you recommended dosing. This basically will just tell you what the optimal dosing is for, like based on what the best evidence.
Sure, sure. I mean, I understand that it's giving dosing, but just to make sure you put the right medicine into it, I thought there could be a way in which you could just read the bottle so it knew exactly what that medicine was.
Yeah, and I don't know of a specific tool that does that at the moment, but yeah, this is just something that I use, especially when taking care of kids, just to quickly figure out sort of what I need to give them. And the other thing that I found is that, and you may or may not know this, but so vital signs, so like heart rate, or how fast someone is breathing, or their blood pressure. It varies with how old you are. And once you get to about 18, things kind of normalize, and we all have some understanding of what a normal blood pressure is or a normal heart rate is. But in younger kids and kids under 1 year old, it can be very difficult for a parent to know what's normal. And so this is just reassuring because it'll tell you quickly, even for me as someone who, like, it's still hard for me to remember all the different variations in terms of what the expected heart rate is or respiratory rate is for somebody who's young, because they can often be the primary indicators for when something is wrong or if somebody's sick.
And it's only $5 too, which is pretty amazing.
Wow. Yeah. So Oliver, you're kind of 4 for 4. Let's do a bonus round. And are there any tools that you use for your mushroom or wild food foraging? Do you use there was iNaturalist, I think, which has been renamed Seek, which tries to help with identification. Do you use anything besides a nice basket?
So I use a basket and a variety of different knives, but for specifically, and I actually wrote about this on Cool Tools a while ago, is I think Sam Thayer's books in particular are the things that I have found to be the most valuable resource. But as far as other things that I carry into the field, I have a loop that I have.
A magnifying glass, you mean?
Like a magnifying glass, yeah. So it's from Belomo. I don't know if they make them anymore. They're from, they were originally developed as like a jeweler's loop or a geologist loop. And they're really great for sort of taking a look and sort of finding out what shape or what the sort of morphology is of the tubules in a bolete or in a polypore. You can also sort of do some, get a closer look at a lot of insects to see what kind of insects you're dealing with or anything that you really want to sort of magnify. So I always have my loop with me. And then I use the iPhone camera mostly just to geotag a lot of stuff. So I end up using that as a means of taking pictures of a particularly good area so that I can always come back at a particular date and time next year. I found that the iOS does a good job of like grouping things so that I can easily rediscover where I was when I took a particular picture.
I would also echo the recommendation for Sam Thayer's books on wild harvesting and foraging of plants. Mostly because he's done the hard work that almost none of the other book writers have done, of actually talking about how you actually process these things to make them edible. Like, you know, people talk about the Indians eating acorns and stuff. Well, turning acorns into meal is not trivial, and it depends on the acorns, and it depends on lots of other things. And he's actually done all the work of, you know, making flour, making whatever it is from acorns, unlike just kind of repeating things that people have heard. Well, you can eat them if you blanch them or soak them. Well, you need more information than that, and he has that information.
It's amazing how often people will say something is, quote, edible. But if you actually try to prepare it in the way that somebody has said, it's almost always inedible or something that you would never seek out. And I think Sam does a really good job of highlighting a narrower range, but then going into a lot of the ethnobotany and then going into like the actual practice of eating and using these things, especially with an eye towards sustainability as well. So he is someone who I have not found anybody who's writing as well as he is on the subject, and I think that he is probably one of the sort of foremost in terms of expertise in the world of wild edibles.
And he had a couple books that were a little bit more Midwest-centric because he's from Wisconsin. But I noticed he has a new book, Incredible Wild Edibles, which I haven't seen. I don't know if that's a summary or best of.
No, it's just the third in his series. It's a little bit more geographically dispersed. So he does cover some edibles that are found out west, but it's 36 new plants. So he doesn't cover the same territory as he did in the first two books. He's just slowly going through and really making a refined effort to make sure that he's producing a really useful set of books. And each and every one of them is something that I've read cover to cover. And they're really great reads. I can't give a hearty enough recommendation on those.
And in terms of assistance in identifying, because that's still a pretty big hurdle for a lot of these, even though you can kind of identify the easy ones pretty easily, but sometimes it's a big hurdle for people to feel confident in their identification, which is not really what Sam dwells on. He's much more about how you actually use these. Is there any kind of a tool, Oliver, that you've come across that helps for you in identifying wild plants?
So wild plants are, I am a slow learner, I guess, in this front. And so I have tried to do a process wherein I haven't found a particular app that really works, mostly because the apps that I have found tend to be really shallow and fail to account for the diversity of phenotypes of a lot of these plants in terms of what the different ages that they come in. And so what I often will do is I just set a goal of when I go out, I'll try to find a plant species that I've never found before, and I'll bring it back and I will identify it using a number of different resources as a means of really sort of going through and making sure that I understand what these things look like at a variety of different stages.
And what are those tools? Are you using a book key or are you using something else?
So I use Sam's books, and then I have a couple of additional books that I have been using. So there's, let me just pull up. This is a book that I have been using for a while, which is John Callis's book, Edible Wild Plants. He does a really good job. I think the problem is there are so many different species of plants that there's no way to easily key them out in a way that at least that I have found, because there's just like such a range. So I don't have a specific resource that I use other than trying to sort of use a couple of really well resourced books like Sam Thayer's and John Callis's and a few other ones that I end up using.
Well, that's helpful. So yeah, we'll have links for Sam Thayer's books, which are good enough often, but you may need help in keying out things for the first time if you are encountering a new plant. So that's really great. So Oliver, do you have anything else that you're excited by these days that you want to share?
What was I just thinking? I will sort of give a pitch. I have it's something that I use every day and then I often forget. And you ask what I take out when I go foraging. I think one of the favorite purchases I've ever made was a pair of really good boots. And the boots that I'm wearing these days are muck boots. I don't know if you guys are familiar. They come in a variety of different sort of styles, but I have a pretty bog standard one. But it's basically, it's a boot where it's rubber on the bottom and neoprene at the top. My wife and I bought a farm when I started residency here in Connecticut. I basically use them for all of my chores around the farm. I use them exclusively when walking in the woods. I basically stop wearing anything but boots in the woods. And one of the big benefits of them is that because they go a little bit higher, I can use them to help reduce the tick burden that I end up getting. It really does. I foraged for almost every day during the summer last year, and I only found one tick on me. And part of that is I also treat my boots with Sawyer's permethrin, which is an anti. It helps reduce the likelihood of getting bit by a tick by up to about 90%, actually.
Oh man, that's good stuff.
So I see that muck boots, there's a whole bunch of different varieties to choose from, and so I have a couple questions. One is this brand a choice based on your experiences with other boots, or is it just that they have a large variety and you found?
So I actually first encountered muck boots when I worked on a lobstering boat about 13 or 14 years ago. They're the only boots that a lot of the lobstermen will wear because they are very reliable, very comfortable, and your feet tend to be better regulated in terms of temperature. And so I actually had one pair of their boots for over 10 years. They're just great boots. They last forever. They were recently bought out. And so I was worried that their production was going to sort of not be as good as it used to be. But I just recently bought a new pair for 2 years ago, and they've been great. I have a current pair of what they're called is the Field Blazer boots. And they're a little lighter weight than the Muckmasters that I used to have. But I can wholeheartedly endorse almost across the board that my wife has a pair that she's had for about 8 years now. And they're amazing for her throughout the fall, winter, and spring. And then in the summer, she goes a little bit lighter because she spends so much time in the sun. But I wear them on a daily basis, whether I'm doing chores or whether I'm foraging. And I wholeheartedly sort of find them to be a very useful tool.
Right, so you don't have to worry about water at all, ever, or brush, or
yep.
Burrs, ticks,
nothing like that. Yeah, it's great because they're so tough that I walk through thorny patches of briars, and we have an invasive rose that's everywhere here, and they just hold up. You know, they aren't liable to poke a hole like some of the other rubber boots. Like I think hunter boots tend to sort of get they tend to crack a little bit easier and don't hold up quite as well under the elements.
Cool. Well, that's really fantastic. You gave us 6 great ones. Thank you so much. I expect nothing less from a former Cool Tools editor.
Exactly. Oliver, this was great. I loved hearing about these tools.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to chat with you, and I look forward to shooting you some other tools in the future.